You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Edition of this fine program, yeah, known to you as All Marine Radio, All Marine, all the time. That's right. That's what we do. So, anyhow, good morning on this Friday, the 7th day of February, the year's 2020, just like your vision, not, all right, back at home. Recording this about an hour and 15 minutes before I normally do. Because I'm going to head down to the Marine Expo West and do post-traumatic winning down there this morning. Actually, at about 11:30. So... and I'm looking forward to that. So I'll do kind of a summary of post-traumatic winning. I have to work on the presentation here a little bit. And then I have a squadron commander coming down that brought it in. So, you know, he's going to speak. And and so hopefully spread the word, at least tell the story a little bit. And it's a good story. Because now... You know, the data it comes with. The Marine Corps just released numbers yesterday that said the Marine Corps had 11 fewer suicides last year. I believe post-traumatic winning is a factor in maybe half of that. I'm not sure because I haven't seen the final numbers, but I know where I did it. Another problem they had before I got there. So that's not bad. That's not bad, sports fans, right? Anything negative is good, right? And that's a significant, you know, that's a significant event. So so that's awesome. That's awesome. And, yeah, but, you know, almost 30% of the decline is in the 2nd Marine Division. And that's awesome. And it's the, you know, it's ultimately the Marines and sailors out there that do that stuff, that, that come and when they don't want to and they sit through it, you know, and then hopefully it resonates. And I don't say hopefully it does. I mean, it does. You've heard the people come on this program and talk about it. So anyway, so I'll go down and tell a little bit of that story today. I reached out to the Marine Corps League guys because they wanted to see it in Quantico. And there was a scheduling issue and a MAC issue with the scheduling, and somehow or other it got screwed up. So anyway, hopefully some of them will be out here at the West event and be able to see it. So looking forward to that and seeing Dennis Tobin and the guys from the Marine Corps League. Hopefully see Mike Regner down there today. And so anyway, it's always a fun time to see all those guys. And looking forward to it. So I'll go do that today. And then I'll come home and pass out on the couch, which is what I pretty much did last night when I got home. But let me just tell you, you know, the 3 days that I spent in Las Vegas, still in my mind, still in my head, just great experience for me. First of all, I wish I would have been a firefighter at some point in my life. The fraternity they share, the camaraderie they share, it's everything that I always enjoyed in the Marine Corps, on the teams I played on, you know, and it's just what I've enjoyed most in my life is that that closeness. And then, you know, then the Marine part of it is that sense of shared danger and that we're in this together and we take care of each other. So I'm extremely excited about the future of that. And, but you know, we'll see. It's not an easy, fight. I would tell you to get this stuff in because you fight through different layers. One, you fight through, this is not traditional, you know, the way we do it. I'm not a PhD. And so the PhDs that run these programs in different counties and different cities, the PhDs that run the behavioral health programs on different bases for different units, right? You got to get it past them, and that ain't easy. But the data certainly helps. The data certainly helps. So anyhow, good morning to you on a Friday morning. The chef's going to join us today, and that's exciting. Well, it's always fun to talk to the chef. He's always got a different take on life. He'll be excited because, although it wasn't who he was rooting for, he was, let's see, how do I phrase this? He had to bet on the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll also talk to him about his team, the Dodgers, is about to get the American League MVP from a couple of years ago, Mookie Betts. And, you know, the Dodgers, you know, they just had not done anything throughout the entire winter and then just crushed it. So, yeah. That's pretty impressive. So, anyway, we'll talk to the chef this morning and see how he's doing. I've been kind of watching the whole Democratic event, right? And that's been pretty interesting. They are like killing each other. Yeah, and they're absolutely killing each other, which I'm sure they don't particularly care for. You know, the last thing you want to do is what? Is eat your own when you get ready to try to when you try to get ready to do something. So like nominate the presidential candidate, but Joe Biden, his horrific showing in Iowa, like what was that? Joe Biden doesn't appeal to people more than, you know, Mayor Pete or Bernie Sanders, one of those two. And Elizabeth Warren, man, she was like, you know, the front runner, right? Endorsed by the New York Times, I think. New York Times endorsed Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar. Yeah, I know her name. So I've been kind of interested in this public kind of reconciliation of American politics, because it's like, do you honestly believe the people that you see on TV, do you believe that they're a reflection of most Americans around the country? And there is that huge divide in the country, and that is, you know, liberal people who live in big cities and then everybody else. And you can't elect a president, you know, solely with liberal people in big cities. And that's what James Carville was talking about when he was I haven't heard him snap his actual rant from the other night. I'd be curious. In fact, I think I want to listen to that.
If this isn't a mess in Iowa, as I said to Claire McCaskill, it'll do until the mess gets here.
Well, the other things that worry me, apparently the turnout in Iowa was not what I would expect it, other people would expect it. I know the numbers are still coming in, but people are telling me it's more like 2016, 2000.
Now, here's what I find interesting about Carville. Anytime somebody who's like a creature of the system turns on the system, right? And Carville is like, he's a creature of the system. Like, he's a jihadist, right? He's a democratic jihadist. Like, he's, and then when he turns on the system, stuff like that, you know, same thing when it happens in the Republican Party, stuff like that always catches my attention. Okay. Mind you, he is, Carville, I mean, he's one of those, you know, data-driven, you know, this county, turnout, all the things he's talking about. He's that guy. So when he snaps, like, what's going on?
18. The polling averages have not been very good the last 10 days. And I've seen some pretty good polls that show enthusiasm among Democrats is not as high as we might like it. So there's something as people are watching this process that is concerning them. I do want to take the chance to congratulate Mayor Pete and his staff. That was a remarkable night that they had in Des Moines. But I think this is not going particularly well so far. And why is Tom Perez still the chairman of the Democratic National Committee? I have no idea. This party needs to wake up and make sure that we talk about things that are relevant to people. We need to go back to 2018, where we had good, diverse, strong candidates that had real connections to the community and talked about real things. We don't need to become the British Labour Party. That's a bad thing. It's not going well over there. So Democrats, and now I want to see these candidates, and Mayor Pete's got something going. Hopefully Senator Warren can you know, become that student at the University of Houston, that single mother that knows that plights that people go through. Who knows? Maybe Mayor Mike can come on. But right now, I got to tell you, I'm not very impressed.
In case you don't know, right, Carville was he's a former Marine. Yeah, I know. I know there's a whole bunch of people that just went, what? Yeah, I know, like, most Marines don't know that. But yeah, and that's kind of when you hear that, you like fall off the chair moment. Like, Carville is a what? Exactly. But you know, he's a smart dude. He's a smart dude. He's a huge advocate for what he does. But he's a smart dude. But again, what always catches my attention is when somebody like that breaks squelch. Right? They go, you know, quote unquote, off the reservation. And they turn on their own and they start ripping their own. To me, that's always very, very interesting criticism to listen to. He continues.
I got to say, James, I'm amazed at how often I hear Democrats reminding other Democrats, if you don't win, none of it's worth anything.
Nothing. Without power, there's nothing. There's only one moral imperative in this country right now, and that is to beat Donald Trump. That's the only moral imperative. It's the only thing I want to hear. In until we understand that, we win every argument, Brian. We win an argument on anything. We don't win elections. because we talk about stuff that is not relevant. We had a great experience in 2018, and the day after, we started all this goofy stuff. So hopefully we got time to jerk this thing back and be about health care and prescription drug prices and education and infrastructure and climate and diplomacy and rejuvenating, whatever it is. But this is not happening so far. And we can't act like this is going well. We can't come out and put three wonderful talking points. We need to, these campaigns have got to be more relevant. For God's sake, Senator Warren, get real out here and you know, let's move this thing along. I mean, we got to do that.
Joe Biden barely fit on the ground.
He's Brian Williams, right? Formerly the anchor of NBC News until he got caught lying about how much he risked his life in Iraq. Yeah, that Brian Williams, who now kind of does things on the periphery. Anyway, he said Joe Biden's name and Carville winces. He didn't say anything, but he winced.
Graphic we have next to you came out of there fourth place last night. What do you make of Joe Biden and his campaign?
He has had an honorable life in politics. All right. This is just not the time. And so what's happened is he blocked out access from my guy, Michael Bennett, from my dear friend, Governor Bullock, blocked out access from Senator Booker. Probably some people that were going to run didn't run because he was in the race. And he's going to, maybe he'll come back, but he's going to have a difficult time. This is not a very good night for him, to say the least.
Who should chair the Democratic Party?
I don't know. Ask Nancy Pelosi. That's my idea. Come on, Speaker. We've got to get somebody in there. Now, I think this thing in Milwaukee is not off to a good start. I see all kinds of things that are very concerning there. And also, I'm just looking at the mega polling averages. I'm looking at public opinion right now. And frankly, we got to snap back and get this thing going, or I don't even think about what would happen if we had four more years of Trump. But this is so far not so good. That's my analysis.
As I always say, you can't run a Whole Foods race in what I insist is still a Campbell's Soup nation. Ari Melber has a few questions for you. Ari?
Thank you, Brian. James, good to see you on a big night.
That was actually not bad. You can't run a Whole Foods race on a Campbell's Soup nation.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
You look at the numbers we now have. More people showed up to their caucus sites, according to the new numbers, in the first alignment backing Bernie Sanders than anyone else. And after the alignments and yada yada, as they say, he was basically now still vying for first with Pete Buttigieg. What does that tell you about the enduring strength of Bernie Sanders in this primary going into New Hampshire, where he did well last cycle? And are you the kind of Democrat that could get behind him if he's the nominee?
Well, I'll get behind, but of course I vote for him. They don't have no choice. But look at the British Labour Party. I mean, we're like talking about people voting from jail cells. All right. We're talking about not having a border. I mean, come on, people. Everyday people are out there struggling. We're trying to get votes in Northern Wisconsin.
You're saying you're concerned that you consider Bernie Sanders for open borders and for incarcerated people voting?
He said that we should give people a ticket. All right. I'm saying what he said. If you read Ron Brownstein, he's got $35 trillion in spending. Or read all of the things. I'm saying, of course, I would vote for him, but I don't want the Democratic Party of the United States to be the Labor Party of the United Kingdom.
And my other question, and then I think we're going to throw it back with all the panelists we have, our esteemed colleagues. My other question for you is Elizabeth Warren here, as mentioned, coming out above Joe Biden in these new numbers. Finishing strong when people had said she might not, overperforming in Polk County, as mentioned. Right. We're watching more of those results coming in any hour or later, potentially. What do you think of her path to nomination now?
The best bio I've seen in a presidential campaign. And she had a very good critique, which was that corruption is holding the country back. And for some reason, I don't know why, she decided to chase Bernie's left tail all over the country and became known for some exotic positions, let's say that, to put it mildly. And if she can get back to what she's about, now, I know her not well, but she's very smart, obviously. She's very smart. I think she understands what's happening in the country, but you can talk about what you talk about is your choice. And I just hope that she gets back to talking about being that afraid single mother going to the University of Houston, working and knowing the struggles that people go through, and not be so technocratic or programmatic or anything else, but say, I have the skill to put this to work, you know, to improve your life. And I think that would be good. I love her daycare plan. I mean, she has some things that she can do. She's got a second win here. She better, you know, she's got to get serious.
James, you're about to.
Hey, I'm Ari Melber from MSNBC.
That's James Carville losing his mind. But kind of interesting stuff. And that's on top of the old Des Moines, the whole Iowa event. But anyway, I thought that was very interesting stuff. And to me, I would tell you that we have politicians that they're just out of touch with the American people, you know? And then, you know, the people in the know, they say, oh, well, this is how you have to run to get the nomination. And then you come back to the center. You can't do that anymore, man. They jam that video up your ass. It's everywhere. Everybody got a phone, right? Everybody's listening. You can't just turn around. Then you're going to be a flip flopper, right? You can't. And so anyway, pretty interesting stuff. Mayor Pete and Bernie. And I was surprised. But again, Joe Biden has never done well nationally. Why doesn't the American population like that dude? I don't really know. But anyway, I watched a little bit of the news last night. I have to tell you this. I don't particularly care for, you know, the president and Nancy Pelosi's little public event. Now, I will tell you this. I do, though. If I'd have been the president of the United States, I would have laid the wood to her ass, too. You know, I sat and listened to all that stuff and all the shit she says. I'd have got after her, too. And so anyway, and you don't have to wonder, like, well, geez, do you think he'll do it? Come on, man. You could set your watch to it. And he'll do it again today because he's going to wear that shit out. And now with the numbers that are coming out, you know, in his favor, and, you know, the stock market this week, man, just exploding. As he gets his feet underneath him, and both economically and now this impeachment thing behind him, you know, stand by. So anyway, I said this last week. I don't know that, you know, Barack Obama seemed like a wonderful human being. He wasn't a good president, though. Okay, he wasn't a good president. And, you know, I think being, and again, even listening to James Carville right there, not once did he mention business or the economy. And in my opinion, when the nation's going well financially, everything else get the fuck out of the way. Everything else get the fuck out of the way. Let me just read you some. Let me just read you some economic headlines. All right. This is jobs released today. January adds a much stronger than expected 225,000 jobs with a boost from the warm weather. Normal payrolls surged 225,000 for the month, well above Wall Street's estimate of 158,000. The unemployment rate ticked higher to 3.6, but for the right reason, as the labor force participation rate increased 0.2 percentage points to 63.4%, matching its highest level since June of 2013, meaning more people in the workforce. Right, that heretofore said, yeah, I'm not even looking. More people back in. Average hourly earnings rose 3.1% from over a year ago to $28.44, right ahead of the estimate of 3% growth. Headline. That's just a headline for today. All right, a headline for today. Here's another one. And this is a little bit more about wage acceleration. despite the revisions. And so what happens is the initial data comes out, right? And then over the course of the next 30, 60, 90 days, they refine the data. Sometimes it's revised upward. Sometimes it's revised down, right? Despite the revisions, the report shows the economy has retained strength, which Trump has heralded as a key tenet of his reelection campaign. And this week, in his State of the Union address, the solid hiring defies expectations for a step down to a slower pace of job growth as businesses delay investment and exceeded the 175,000 average monthly gain for 2019. The pace also supports Fed policymakers' view of the labor market as strong and is more than sufficient to keep up with population growth. At the same time, Boeing companies halt on production of the troubled 737 MAX airplane and fears of the coronavirus spreading are likely to weigh down the U.S. economy in the coming months. But again, you know, awesome economic news for the president and the stuff he highlighted in the State of the Union address that I didn't see, but I was reading. I mean, those numbers, man. And that's why, to me, I even just listening, you know, to James Carville, not once did he mention the economy. And to me, man, they don't say a word about the economy. So I just find that is a single, you know, that is hope that I can get a better job. That is hope that I can do better. That is the American dream, man. Not another fucking social program, you know, which is what dominates the news. I'm going to make your college debt go away. I'm going to give you daycare for free. How about giving me a better job so I can do it for myself, man? How about that? How about getting me more access into countries that have blocked our products and hurt our workers? How about that? And taking away lots of middle-class jobs. How about that? But you tend not to hear that. So I don't know. That's what I think. I think tone deaf, man. I think absolutely, positively fucking tone deaf. All right. Not tone deaf is Whitney Houston. Super Bowl was last Sunday. She sang this, I want to say, in 1991 or two at the Super Bowl. And I play it every Friday because I think it's the best rendition I've ever heard. So Whitney Houston singing the national anthem, Good Morning, on a Friday. This is dedicated to O. Doc Lynch, who who is a great supporter of All Marine Radio and Post Traumatic Winning. And Timmy been through a lot in life, and is incredibly supportive of me and Post Traumatic Winning, always encouraging. Brutally honest with his life, which is good for him, and then turn around and trying to help other people. So this is dedicated to old Doc Lynch on a Friday.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
Coming up on 33 minutes after the hour. Time to check the weather. Quantico reports rain and 49 degrees on the east coast of the country. They got three weather gale warning. No, small craft advisory. I could almost say them without even knowing. But because it hit the three threshold, you got to look. That's the way it is. Wind advisory, small craft advisory, and gale warnings. Yes. I like when I'm right. Been looking for a high of 52 today. In Quantico, Camp Lejeune, sunny and 59 right now. Nice day on it. In the Palmetto State of North Carolina, I think that's what they call it. 29 Palms, sunny and 52. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, sunny and 39? What? That's got to be wrong. Anyway. Currently dark, cloudy, and 63 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark, cloudy, and 66 in Okinawa, in Afghanistan, in the Opium Cradle. Clear, dark, and 50 in Lashkar Gah in Helmand. And the city of mosques, the city of Fallujah, in the province of Al Anbar. In the country of Iraq. Yeah, also known as Iraq on your maps. It is clear, dark, and 65 degrees. Currently at the home of Allmarine Radio, it is... Stand by. Partly sunny and 45 degrees. Looking for a high of 69 degrees today. And sunny. Tomorrow, 68 degrees. And then on Sunday, 63. That is a look at your weather. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines. Some interesting stuff in the news this morning. As a Friday edition of Allmarine Radio continues. A little bit before, it's not exactly live, but it's not really recorded very, like last night. It's recorded maybe an hour or so before. So, yeah. So it's kind of live, but not really. I have to do shithole weather. I'm only going to have one forecast, and that's Bev's forecast. She's the only one who got hers in early. Good morning and happy Friday from Churchbridge, Mac. A four-day break from the bitter cold starts this afternoon. No good, though, comes from a quick February warm-up. Oh, see? These are these superstitious weather people. Yeah, meaning if it's warm in February, there's something else bad coming behind it. After a clear and cold overnight of 15 degrees below zero that felt like 29 below zero, it is currently overcast with the south wind at 8, temperature of 11 degrees below that feels like 27. This afternoon, scattered flurries will roll in and temperatures will rise to 21 degrees above zero. Yeah, wind chill sits at 10 above. So how about that? Rinks are the busiest recreational buildings in Saskatchewan towns during the winter. Here is a summer photo of the curling rink situated across the street from the skating rink, don't you know? Look at it. Poured on a concrete slab, right? Metal structure, curved roof. Let's say Churchbridge Curling Club, 1984. Probably had a big, big drive. Let me tell you. I didn't know until I moved up towards the border how popular curling is, right? It's like bowling. It's like a frozen version of horseshoes. And, you should see those, you know, men and women. You watch it and you're like, holy shit, man. So it's a huge sport. I mean, if you watch, if you track, you know, most watched sporting events in Canada, curling's up there. Everybody got a lot of bowlers up there in Canada. But anyway, more of Allmarine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I promise you. Or not. What happened? Did I do something wrong? No, I didn't do anything wrong. It's not me. Hold on. That doesn't work. What about this?
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara. And you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is Irish music, in case you don't know. It's from Where the Streets Have No Name. You too. Is the band performing? Here it comes. Get ready. I got an email last night. Hey, Mac, when you get a chance, I'd be curious to know the biggest difference between firefighters and Marines relative to being an audience. Actually, there, I would tell you there's two, and they're substantial. Number one is age. You know, Marines come in, and they're young. I mean, you know... contrasted for me very visually, you know, just when they walk in, what do they look like? You know, firefighters are adults, man. I would say the average age is in their 30s, between 30 and 35, somewhere in there. So you got a fair amount of guys in their 50s, You know, yeah, there were some recruits there, right? Shiny boots, shaved heads, right? Down in front, all that kind of shit. So, yeah, that was pretty interesting. So first the age, and then, and you know, I adjust the presentation for that. And then the second one is the nature of the way that they accumulate trauma. Now, if you just say, okay, everybody in their personal life kind of sort of does it the same way. You grow up and stuff happens. And then slowly but surely in your life it happens to you and you kind of go out and you live with it, right? That's how we do it. But so that's the same. What's different about firefighters is well, let me start with Marines. Marines, we deploy, you know, we go to conflict, we deploy, we're there for a certain amount of time, the way we manage wars now, and then we come home. Right, we don't stay there indefinitely. We don't stay there for 4 years and then come back when it's over. You know, we go for a period of time and we rotate back to the United States. Firefighters, I mean, you know, these guys, a lot of them are looking to retire, right? That's one of the incentives about, you know, being a firefighter. You know, you can, you know, if you get, you know, in that before you're 30, right? If you get there before you're 30, you can retire by the time you're 55 with a pretty good retirement. I mean, you look at the retirements that firefighters get around the country for a lifetime spent, you know, risking their lives for their communities, and they're pretty handsomely rewarded. So, I mean, there's a big incentive. Now, the downside of that is 25 years of responding to emergencies every week of, you know, every week of your life except the weeks you're off. And that's rough, man. 25 years of, you know, a life filled with, you know, below average events on a daily basis. And so, and then, you know, I would tell you this, I believe that my conversation with those guys is not, you know, different than the conversation I have with my nephew, who's a cop, not different than other cops that I know. And they all say the same thing. Hey, we don't talk about it, right? Our mental health stuff doesn't really speak to us. So, I think those are probably the major things that jump out at you, you know, glaringly in terms of the major differences between the two audiences. But, you know, the things that are, there's way more things that are similar than those that which is different, you know, the aspiration to serve, absolutely the same. Wanting to be better, absolutely the same. The sense of camaraderie and fraternity, absolutely the same. And it was awful cool to watch. So, yeah. So, no, it was, no, thank you for the question. Very, very, very cool. And a great experience. But for me, the coolest part of the experience was, you know, the whole genesis of me going up there is that one of my Marines from my first platoon ever, the Goon Platoon, 3rd Platoon, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. And they're still the fucking Goon Platoon, which is what made which is awesome. Which is absolutely awesome. The so anyway, that relationship, right, which Nick Ratiff and I reconnected a couple years ago, and but I mean, again, I mean, that's 35 years and 4 months ago that relationship got started. And that's, you know, probably my favorite part of the story. And let me tell you, I put his picture up. I did the thing 12 times in 3 days. I put his picture up in every version. I said, hey, you need to ask him about why he's dressed the way he's dressed. And so he sees me and he said, my phone has just been blowing up. I said, he starts laughing. And, so anyway, it was a good time. It was special. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I hope that they got something out of it. I know that they did. I mean, there were guys who came back a second time to watch it. And I was like, what the hell, man? I'm like, I just saw you yesterday, right? You're like, yeah, I wanted to. I thought, this is good. I've never seen anything like that. You know, again, I don't know if I mentioned it, but, you know, he said, in the middle of it, I sent those three goals and 10 commandments to my wife and said, hey, check this out. And then when I got home, you know, we sat and talked about it for 2 or 3 hours. It's a wonderful experience. So anyway, we'll check the news here before the chef comes on. Let's see. From Stars and Stripes, man is charged with recruiting Camp Pendleton Marines to pick up, transport unauthorized immigrants. Federal prosecutors have filed a conspiracy charge against a man accused of recruiting and paying Marines and other United States citizens to transport unauthorized immigrants throughout San Diego County. The charges against Francisco Saul Rojas Hernandez is connected with a scheme that entangled 24 Camp Pendleton Marines, at least 13 of whom left the Corps in the wake of a human trafficking and drug accusations. Military prosecutors dropped most of the charges in the high-profile case late last year after a judge ruled that the mass arrest of 16 Marines in front of their 800-person battalion last summer was unlawful. You know what? It really doesn't matter. It was for good order and discipline, so nobody gives a shit what that judge, you know, thinks. Get him out of the Marine Corps. So if I was a battalion commander, I'd have done the same fucking thing, right? The UCMJ is not about their rights. It's about the needs of the greater organization, and it's not like the civilian world. Rojas Hernandez is accused of conspiring with the Marines and others to transport the unauthorized immigrants within the U.S. for financial gain, according to the criminal complaint filed last month in U.S. District Court. The attorney for the defendant did not immediately respond Wednesday night to a message seeking comment. You think? During questioning, two Marines said a man they knew as Rojas had paid them, recruited them, and organized a smuggling operation, according to a probable cause statement. One of the Marines identified Rojas Hernandez when showed a photo lineup, according to the documents. Over the next few months, Border Patrol agents arrested several other U.S. citizens who gave them the name Rojas when identifying who they had recruited and paid them. According to court documents, Border Patrol agents linked at least 6 cases to Rojas Hernandez. Who is this dude, man? Well, who is he? Is he an American citizen? Who is he? What does he do? They don't say. From United States Naval Institute News, Ben Werner writes this. Headline, Marine Corps suicide rate declines. Navy rate rises in 2019. The Air Force suicide rate rose by 33%. In 2019, 47 active duty Marines committed suicide, 11 fewer than 2018. And I believe post-traumatic winning is responsible, or at least contributed, right, to maybe 40% of that decline. And I'm pretty proud of that. The Marine Corps suicide rate for calendar year 2019 was 25.3 per 100,000 active duty Marines, down from 31 per 100,000. So I mean, I'll tell you what, that's awesome. That's awesome news. And let me tell you this, you know, I think the Marine Corps can do way better, way better. You know, preliminary Air Force suicide totals for 2019 show the service reported 84 active duty personnel taking their lives. That is up from 60. Right? That is up from 60. That equates to 25.3 per 100,000, which is equal to the Marine Corps rate, which they have never, ever, ever been close to. The national suicide rate for all Americans is 14.2. And that is from 2018. The Army suicide data for 2019 is not immediately available. Ruh-roh. Normally that's indicative that it's not a good number. Although the Air Force has been very public about their stuff, right? They've been very public about their stuff. So, interesting. Interesting. So, that in the news. No, honestly, great news for the Marine Corps. Great news for the Marine Corps. So, congratulations to everybody who had a hand in that. From Marine Corps Times, family seeks Supreme Court $100 million lawsuit for Parris Island Marine recruit's death. The parents of a Marine recruit who died during training in Parris Island have asked the Supreme Court to overturn a lower court's dismissal of their $100 million wrongful death lawsuit. The lawsuit claims Raheel Siddiqui had to endure torture, maltreatment, and abuse, at least in part because he was a Muslim. Originally filed in 2017, the lawsuit was dismissed in 2019 by a three-judge panel of the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals based on the Ferris Doctrine, which courts repeatedly have used to block lawsuits against the government for wrongful death and medical malpractice. Siddiqui's parents, Ghazala and Masood, are asking the Supreme Court to weigh in on whether the Ferris Doctrine applies to alleged military negligence that takes place during the recruiting process before a civilian joins the military. The petition was docketed with the court on January 22nd. No indication on whether the court will actually hear the case. So, the petition claims that Siddiqui's recruiter failed to inform him of the particularly harsh treatment he would receive in boot camp for being Muslim, and that the Marine Corps failed to protect him from drill instructors with a history of singling out Muslim recruits for abuse. Well, I don't think a recruiter would tell a Marine that, because that's not what's supposed to happen. So, interesting. Next story. Army Task Force takeover could spell doom for infantry reform. Now, this is a story, well, it's written by Todd South. It's in Army Times, but it has Marine roots in it. All right. A co-founder of a task force focused on radically improving close combat across military services said the initiative may be headed towards irrelevance outside of a small sector of the Army. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper told an audience at Johns Hopkins yesterday that the Close Combat Lethality Task Force, launched in 2018 under then-Secretary James Mattis, would likely move to the Army. Quote, what we're probably going to do is transition that to the Army, because something like that needs a strong foundation, a backbone on which the ideas can be filtered out. Esper, former Army infantry officer with the 101st Airborne Division during the Gulf War and later commanded a rifle company, he also previously served as the Army Secretary. But retired Army Major General Robert Scales told Army Times on Monday that the move was a bad idea that could spell the end of the effort. Quote, it's just sort short-sighted, and it reflects a lack of understanding about what the task force was formed to do by Secretary Mattis, Scales says. I'm deeply, deeply saddened by this. The story goes on. The Army is conducting additional analysis before further decisions are made. Army Lieutenant Colonel Dryce Harris, who's a spokesperson who is only repeating what somebody told either him or her. I don't know. Dryce? What is that? Close Combat Lethality Task Force Chief of Staff Kimberly Bender told Army Times that prior to any official decision regarding realignment, the task force had nothing to add to the secretary's comment. Yeah, that was a big, you know, Secretary Mattis, he was, you know, that was a big deal. You know, it was going to transform you know, the infantry community. So maybe not so much now. Top five stories in early bird. Number one, Trump says U.S. operation killed Al-Qaeda leader in Yemen. Now, again, you know, this doesn't slow them down. So, you know, once again, we'll play whack-a-mole. But American forces have killed, but it's good news. American forces have killed a terrorist commander in Yemen, President Donald Trump announced Thursday night. Trump said in a statement that Qasem al-Rimi, the leader and founder of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, had been successfully eliminated. The statement did not say how the operation was carried out or provide any details, but a drone strike with al-Rimi as the target was reported last week. Al-Rimi and Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula committed unconscionable acts of violence against civilians in Yemen and sought to conduct and inspire numerous attacks against the United States and our forces, Trump said. His death further degrades AQAP, Al-Qaeda Arabian Peninsula, in case you don't know, and the global Al-Qaeda movement. So, again, but they successfully reinvent themselves. And so, anyway, Yemen, man, what a shit show that is. Number two in the early bird today. Here's your friendly election year reminder to stay away from politics while you're in uniform. That's a pretty standard article. I wonder if they update it. Did you pull it out and just dust it off and put it back in there? Number three, U.S. troops have been squaring off with Russian contractors in Syria, raising worries of wider conflict. Again, we've been talking about this. This has been going on for a while. This is not a new story, right? This is not a new story. So, number four, signs of white supremacy, extremism up again in poll of active duty troops. Number five, Pentagon adds a list of bases that can house passengers quarantined for the coronavirus. Coronavirus, man, everywhere, right? I was surprised to see that the death toll is only 600. Worldwide death toll was only 600. And change. I want to say 685, something like that. So, anyhow, the Pentagon has identified military installations that can provide housing for quarantined passengers traveling to the U.S. through 11 major airports screening for the coronavirus from China. The list includes Joint Base Pearl Harbor, Great Lakes Training Center, near Chicago O'Hare, Naval Air Station, Reserve Base, Texas, near Dallas-Fort Worth International, Dobbins Air Reserve Base, near Hartsfield-Jackson Airport in Atlanta, Fort Hamilton in New York, right, adjacent to JFK, Naval Base Kitsap, close to SeaTac, Joint Base Anacostia for passengers traveling through Dulles International Airport, Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst for Newark Airport, and Fort Custer Training Center near Detroit. Fort Custer Training Center, named for, yeah, George Armstrong Custer, who was killed while leading the 7th Cavalry in the Battle of the Little Bighorn, who was from the great state of Michigan. Yeah, who led, I want to say, is it the 1st Michigan Cavalry or the 2nd? I think it's the 1st Michigan Cavalry during the Civil War. Yeah. So he's a Michigan man, buried at West Point along with his wife, Libby. So anyway, so the coronavirus, all over the news. A couple of overseas operation stories. One, Turkey has no plans to withdraw troops from posts in Syria. So, yeah, why would they? They seem to be pretty happy with it. And two, Iraq considers deepening military ties with Russia. Now, again, Russia has helped, right, Syria. But my own opinion is, This is more of a a swat at the United States, right? It's more of the theater, right? It's more of the theater of of we need to show the Americans that we really don't need them. All of it a charade because they know the existence of the regime is tied to American military power. This headline is from Baghdad. Iraq and Russia discuss prospects for deepening military coordination, Iraq's defense ministry said on Thursday, amid a strain in the Baghdad-Washington relation after the U.S. airstrike killed a top Iranian general inside of Iraq. So there you have it. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, this program continues here. And the chef will join us. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it. The one and only, absolutely beautiful and gorgeous All Warrior Radio Network.